That has to happen. That totally has to happen.
That was funny.
Oh.
I went that way. That one goes into
Yes, absolutely.
And I want you to play it at the end of Kaz's correction.
There you go. Put the kaboom in the front and the, oh my God, who the hell cares?
Are we recording now?
Oh, there you go.
We've been recording for a while.
Excellent. Okay, yeah, that's plenty of intro. Ready for the countdown?
Okay, I'm ready for the countdown.
Hit it.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is Wayne Youngblood with Regency Superior Auctions, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
Return to send up. Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 69. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, Tom, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Dawn. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today, and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT, or you can call us and leave a message at country code 1-949-873-4298. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, Stitcher, and many more. Let's talk about stamps. This week, we'll be talking about stamp news, the top 10 USPS customers of 2015, hashtag stamp stories, hashtag spring break, Cash's corrections, and our expert topic this week is a discussion with our friend Wayne Youngblood of Regency Superior Auctions. So, stamp news. Top 10 USPS customers of 2015. Every year, the Kansas City-based Hush Blackwell Law Firm, using information supplied by the Postal Service under a Freedom of Information Act request, compiles a list of the top businesses that generate income for USPS. The law firm noted that 9 of the top 10 firms used by the Postal Service were either transportation companies or technology companies. The top 10 providers of business to the USPS this year are, in descending order, number 10, Northrop Grumman Corporation, which operates a central repair facility for the USPS in Topeka, Kansas. 9, auto parts supplier Wheeler Brothers Incorporated of Somerset, Pennsylvania, with $175 million?
Oh, it gets worse.
Wow. Number 8, Accenture Federal Services, a consulting firm with revenues of $188 million.
Wonder what they are.
A consulting firm.
Consult them and find out.
Yeah.
Number 7, HP Enterprise Services, a computer firm with revenues of almost $192 million. Number 6, United Airlines Incorporated, with revenues of $197 million.
That one to me is interesting.
I wonder what they do.
Yeah.
Oh, there's going to be more that generate even more, huh? Coming up.
My guess is they fly all the places that the Postal Service doesn't want to.
Yeah.
Number 5, Victory Packaging of Houston, a logistics and distribution service provider for ReadyPost and other packaging programs, with $212 million in revenues. Number 4, Salmon Companies Incorporated, a Little Rock, Arkansas trucking company with $229 million in postal revenues.
That entry seems a little fishy.
It does.
Mm-hmm. Honeywell International, which earned $273 million to provide handheld mobile delivery devices for letter carriers. The number 2 supplier was the Energy United Electric Membership Corporation of Statesville, North Carolina, which received almost $439.9 million for telecommunication and energy billing services.
That I've never heard of these guys, and they're like the biggest people. I mean, I see junk mail all the time. I see envelopes. I see covers in cover boxes. I've never seen any of these guys.
Well, maybe explaining number 1 will help here in a minute.
Yeah. Okay, number 1.
Federal Express. With a tab of almost $1.4 billion, FedEx takes the top spot on this list. The Memphis-based carrier has held the top position as the leading postal supplier since 2002. FedEx has dominated the list since it received a major contract to carry mail between many cities. United Parcel Service is also a major letter carrier for the USPS and ranked 11th in the last fiscal year, with $154 million in postal revenues.
So the post office uses FedEx.
They contract out.
Because FedEx is cheaper.
Yep. They do their bulk transfer between cities, from what I could find.
Wow.
Imagine that. A private company can do something that the government does cheaper and better.
And probably a little faster, too.
I think this is the only one who has ever been named FedEx. I can't. That's incredible to me. Oh, well.
Time for hashtag stamp stories, hashtag spring break. Calling all parents and grandparents. Spring break 2016 and Easter both are just around the corner. When many people think of spring break, they think of fun in the sun on a tropical beach somewhere, or maybe a trip with the kids to see some distant family members. And Easter is filled with church services and brightly colored egg hunts. But this can also be an opportunity to share stamp collecting with the school-age members of your family while they're at home for a few extra days this year. The National Park Services Department offers one fun way to involve stamps while on spring break. You can find their National Parks Passport at www.nps.org, where you can place mint stamps during your travels and have them officially canceled at stations within each national park. What are your spring break or Easter plans this year? Share your attempts to include your favorite hobby in your spring break plans with us on Twitter and Facebook, hashtag stamp stories, hashtag spring break. And now Cash's corrections.
Where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom.
I like that intro much better than the other one.
I do too.
Where's the landmine? I mean,
I like that one better. So a follow-up to the last episode when we were talking about USPS profits. Lynn's just posted their first quarter results in their section. They have a Washington postal scene. The USPS made $1.3 billion in the first quarter. But after their mandates and their federally required stuff, meaning unions and medical and pensions and stuff like that.
Paying their employees?
No. Paying people who don't even work for them anymore. I understand paying pensions, but, you know, their actual profit was $300 million. In other words, out of that $1.3 billion, $1 billion went away to stuff. That's why the post office is having so many problems.
So if you ever feel bad, like you think you're wasting money, just remember, the post office wasted $1 billion in one quarter.
Yep, $4 billion a year. And like I said, it's all stuff that if it was a normal business, they would renegotiate and get rid of. So that's why, the postmaster wants to put the 2 cents back on so that they can cover it. But the interesting thing is that letters fell 4%, which, you know, you kind of expect. Packages increased by 18%.
Wow.
So a lot of people are sending bigger stuff, and, of course, a lot of people are, you know, not sending as many letters because now you can do an email.
Well, you know, I just ordered a package, and I got an email today that they said they could either deliver it to my post office box and the postage would be $40, or they could send it to my home address with UPS and it'd be $18.
What?
Usually it's the other way around.
Oh.
That's crazy.
Were you ordering explosives?
No.
That's weird.
That is weird.
That is weird. And then the second one is...
Well, that's why the Postal Service can contract with FedEx and UPS.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I mean, look what they did with insurance.
So you give them 40, they send it to UPS, who sends it for 18, and they keep the other 22?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I give a lot, you know, sometimes I ship stuff, and I'll give it to Danny to ship for me. And it'll be cheaper to send it Federal Express, like next day or 2 day, ground, delivered to the person's house. It'll be cheaper than if I send it through the mail in like a Priority box.
Mm-hmm. Well, wow. To be fair, UPS doesn't deliver to P.O. boxes, and that's where I had my mail going.
That's a biggie, yeah.
So,
I just remember, I'm on eBay still a bit, but I remember when I was really buying, well.
Hold on, what's going on? Are you running out of money?
Well, I guess the difference is I don't really see anything offered anymore except USPS for shipping.
Yeah.
So the last time I really saw people offering it as a fair sort of three-directional shipping, UPS, USPS, FedEx, UPS and FedEx was always astronomically more than sending it by the USPS. So that's really weird.
Well, I remember back
when also, to you be had, fair, you're buying stamps, which are like low volume type of things. And FedEx and UPS tend to be able to ship packages a lot more conveniently and inexpensively than the Postal Service, but the Postal Service can do small letters and things like that much better and much quicker and much cheaper.
Well, I've been on eBay, you know, way over 15 years, and in the beginning, you would get negatives. They would give you negatives if you didn't use something with post. If you sent something to a stamp collector and it showed up without stamps on it, you'd get negatives. I mean, I know that doesn't apply anymore with all the postage confirmation and stuff like that, but you used to get negatives for not putting stamps on your shipment. So
that's a little ludicrous.
Well, come on. Stamp collectors buying stamps from stamp collectors or dealers, you kind of expect that. But
yeah. I get one where it's metered mail from a stamp collector, and I go, come on.
Come on.
Well, hey, they're all going into my collection. Why would I ship them back out?
Hey, we get guys that send stuff to us here, don't we, that say, hey, send the front of that package back to me when you send me my stuff.
I'll pick up a package, and I'll look at it and go, man, these are great stamps. And I'll give it to Danny and go, yeah, he wants them shipped back. It's like, damn.
That's awesome. They know when they're sending us good stuff.
Yeah.
Start shipping some stuff to yourself.
Yeah, but I'd rather just get it off mail eventually. The second thing is the United Nations is under a little bit of controversy, let's say again, because the Lgbt community issued, or they have the United Nations issuing a set of gay stamps, basically.
Oh, no.
And it has, like, two lesbians, two men raising a kid, a transgender person with butterfly wings.
And so they're going to issue a stamp for roughly maybe 2% of the population?
Well, that's what the criticism is, because they list all
I want a stamp for me.
Yeah.
I'm a white guy.
They should have a Scott stamp for all the Scots. That's how that should work.
No, so they have. I think you're the butterfly stamp.
Scotland does have postage, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's a stamp for Scots.
Anyway, their biggest criticism was they have eight stamps. It's an eight-stamp set. And the one sexual orientation that they leave out is straight couples.
Of course.
And it's, you know, they've received a whole bunch of stuff saying, oh, all these are alternatives. Isn't normal an alternative? And I put normal with, I'm really not going to use quotes, but I'll use it quotes just so I don't get any hate mail. But that's an interesting thing, and we'll see what happens, because they're under a lot of pressure to withdraw the issue or to change it.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah, so that may be something that we see something coming of it, from political correctness to...
Well, aren't there a number of member nations of the United Nations that are Islamic or have, you know, just...
Oh, but they love gay people. They give them all free neckties.
I thought they just pushed them off of five-story buildings.
Colombian neckties don't count, Cash.
No, they don't.
No, they...
Oh, my God, who the hell cares?
So I guess that's the end of Cash's collection.
And that's it.
Wayne Youngblood of Regency Superior Auctions is joining us via phone. Wayne is a longtime friend of PSC and Stamp Show here today. Wayne is a professional author and a lifelong collector. Wayne Youngblood is a professional author and a lifelong collector. He works for Regency Superior Auctions, which was established in 1929. For the past 8 years, he has been in charge of lotting and describing auctions. Regency Superior is also the largest space collection auctioneer in the world. Regency Superior Stamp Auctions is one of the largest in the country. With that, I would like to welcome Wayne Youngblood to our podcast. So, Wayne, how's the stamp market going?
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag, and I guess that's kind of always the case. Depending on what area you're interested in, some things are doing extremely well, other things not so much. A lot of Western Europe, for example, is really kind of down in the dumps right now. For most, probably most of your listeners are U.S. collectors. And that too is a mixed thing. Certainly, high quality stamps are always doing well and continuing to increase in value in most cases. Certainly the classics are. And what we also call the bottom of the barrel does extremely well. These are the large box lots where people always go for treasure hunting. But if you got a large supply of mint never hinged sets of Lexan Concords and Huguenot Walloons, good luck selling them. That middle of the road type of thing seems to be fairly depressed right now. So the highs and the lows are literally the highs and the lows. The best and the worst of them are selling the best.
What do you find people like really looking for? What is the real, if there was a hot item right now, I know it used to be China. Is it still China, or is there something else that people are really looking for now?
Well, China has cooled down some, but there's still a lot of demand for it. We're beginning to see some movement, not as fast as I'd anticipated, but we're beginning to see some movement in India, where a lot of people now are having a little bit more disposable income and repatriating their stamps. British Africa seems to be doing very well. Actually, a lot of British Commonwealth seems to be doing very well. And those are really, again, other than some specific stamps here or there, in terms of trends, those are some of the general ones that we see.
Is there anything of interest that's coming up in the next auction?
Well, actually, yes. There's actually four different lots I'd like to mention, and not necessarily because they're high value, but because this is our own St. Louis Stamp Expo, one of the World Series shows, and it's our hometown location. We're always happy to have St. Louis spares when we can get them. And we've got a very nice example of a 10-cent St. Louis spare. And I don't know if your readers know much about the story of those, but St. Louis spares are the postmaster's provisionals of 1846 that feature bears. Actually, here's a great trivia question. Are you familiar with the St. Louis bear design? Anybody?
Oh, yes. I think we all are, yeah.
Okay. How many bears are on that stamp?
Well, most people would say two.
I would vote two.
and you'd be wrong. There's three. The design is based on the Missouri State Seal. And the circular tablet between the two bears down in the lower left quadrant, it's barely recognizable, but if you look at a real seal, you'll see there's another bear down in there.
Ah, sort of like a hidden Mickey.
Yeah, something like that. It's a great Stamp Club trivia question. But at any rate, these were put out as an early form of prepayment. St. Louis is the only one that put out a 20-cent value because at the time there was really no need. The fees were 5 cents and 10 cents for under 300 and over 300 miles. But St. Louis decided there was a need for a 20-cent variety as well, and this was actually created three different alterations to the original plate, which only contained six subjects to begin with, and so with every single stamp being engraved in individually, no two positions are alike. So if one had the money, more than anything, one could plate these things and identify every single one of them.
Is there any sheets of out there? I mean, I doubt it, but...
No, yeah, there's no sheets known out there at all. There are a couple of pairs. There's a couple of even EFO items. I believe it's the 5-cent value that has one printed on both sides. It was printed on two different paper types. There's four as small of a varieties.
Probably as is all hand-engraved stamps, there's a lot of little nicks and bumps for people to identify.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, of course, another thing, too, even though these are the most elaborate designs of all Postmaster Provisionals, you know, most of them are simply letters and numbers. And you know, despite this somewhat provincial illustration style, in fact, the left bear looks more like a badger than a bear. it's a really neat issue. Well, one of the other interesting stories about the bears is that they were so extremely scarce in the early days of stamp collecting that a lot of experts thought they were fakes, and it wasn't until 1895 when a janitor in Louisville, Kentucky was ordered, worked at the courthouse, and he was ordered to burn a bunch of waste paper, and as he was stuffing reams and reams of paper into the furnace, suddenly a couple of covers fell out that had St. Louis bears on them. And they caught his eye. He pulled them out. By the time he pulled everything out that he could salvage, he found 137 of these St. Louis bears. And seeing that they were unusual, he took them to the caretakers of the courthouse, who immediately thought these are fantastic. And the bottom line of this, they took them out for a drink and then sold the stamps for about $20,000.
So he got a drink instead of a new Corvette.
Yeah, something like that.
You said you had some other items, too.
Yeah, got a couple of other items. One of the scarcer items that we're featuring this time is the 4-cent grant. Of course, it was issued as an imperf and then sold to the Shermack Company to apply private perfs. And there's like a total of 39 of these known used, and we have one of the nicer ones in the sale. It's a nice used example with a wavy cancel, and you know, these catalogs for $52,000.
Wow.
So it's a very, very scarce stamp and very desirable. And we,
using your crystal ball against a $52,000 catalog value, how much do you think it'll actually sell for?
That's a good question. It depends on who's looking for it. You know, one of the things with extremely rare stamps is there's also an extremely thin market. And so at any given time, you know, if there's two people who want it, it could come very close to catalog or perhaps even exceed it. But if there's only one person looking at it, you're talking probably whatever the reserve is, which may be, you know, I haven't looked at this, but it, you know, may be looking at $30,000 or even less.
So it's still an impressive item.
Oh, extremely so. Extremely so. It's one of the very scarcest of all 20th century issues. Hmm. One of the other neat items, and I think Scott has an affinity for this one too, we have a collection. It's actually part of an exhibit of a person who collected the 6-cent Eagle Airmail C-23, and a specialized collection throughout, but in particular, lot 3150 is a nice cover with a pair of the imperforate horizontally block, a block of four on it. And there's a quick but neat story behind this, where the finder, a fellow by the name of Frank Zeltman, discovered 40 panes of these things the day after the stamp was released. And so, of course, none are known on first day cover. But to document the event, he made 6 covers, 4 of them with blocks and a couple with pairs. And these were all canceled, of course, on May 15th, 1938. As a result of all this, later on, he lost his job. But the covers live on.
Well, what job was he working for the post office?
Well, not directly, as I understand it, but he had a good buddy who was, and the two of them, you know, with some investigation, got into a bit of trouble. There was nothing really wrong done, but it was one of those things that the post office department back then kind of frowned on any of this kind of, you know, they had just relatively recently gone through the whole Roby scandal with the inverted Jenny, and so they weren't thrilled when errors came out and there was a lot of publicity generated. Right.
So they basically had access to be able to look through the post office stock before it was sold. And
that's what I understand.
And yes. And they basically they purchased it ahead of the public.
Right, right.
Well, I understand that. I understand why they would do it. I understand getting fired for it. And I understand that probably if he got another job relatively quickly, he made some good money there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so other than the C-23A, which that's interesting. I'm going to pull up the catalog just so I can see the covers now. What else do you have that
One more question on that C-23A, Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know when the last one of these appeared in the marketplace?
Oh, boy. I couldn't tell you. I personally don't recall having seen one in the marketplace. The consigner of this, I know, has owned this one for probably over 30 years. But, because there were so few of the covers created, the whereabouts of most of them are even unknown.
Well, those particular ones are on Airmail Week, National Airmail Week covers.
Oh, that's why they like them.
But I did notice that you also have a commercial usage that is dated later also in your sale.
That's right.
I think
that's the 1939 cover, I believe.
Yeah. It was just a couple lots later.
Yeah, it's those are, and again, this is one of those where the existence of which I didn't even know. I mean, I've not seen commercial covers before this. The consigner here was he tracked down every lead for every possible variety of these things. I've known him for many, many years, and he's still alive, very, very thorough collector. And so the fact that he found some of these things that I never even knew existed doesn't surprise me.
Just curious, did he find it like he bought a humpback trunk full of stamp collections and this was at the bottom, or did he see this item and say, hey, I got to have that one?
No, I doubt that it was found by chance. Because he specialized in this issue, of course, many, many dealers were looking for him, so he had lots of eyes on material.
Yeah.
I seriously doubt it was found by chance. Now, it's entirely possible, though, that whoever he bought it from didn't know that it was as rare as it is as a commercial use. You know, in other words, they may have priced it as if it was one of the Airmail Week covers.
For 50 cents?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's been so long since they've been in the marketplace that there is a value listed in the Scott catalog, but I think you can pretty much throw that out the window because it's been so long since any of them have ever been seen.
I think that's right. And, of course, we'll see when prices realized come around. But again, these things are so scarce that the Scott value never does justice just simply because there's no way that they can accurately figure what the market is on something that's not seen the light of day for, four decades.
Right, and especially with an item where there's only six known.
Exactly, exactly.
Wow, six known. That's amazing. Yeah,
four for blocks and two for pairs.
And they're easy to expertise, too, because they're all made by the same guy, postmarked at the same place.
And they're also all addressed to him.
Right, right.
He sent them to himself.
Well, that makes sense.
Well, yeah.
If he's trying to document that they really exist, he sends them to himself so they go through the mail. So anybody comes up, they go, yeah, here, look, it was used. It's not some printer's waste or something. It's not fake.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. There's, if you don't mind, there's one other item I'd like to mention that's in the sale that particularly caught my eye.
Sure. Oh, of course.
This is lot 2892, and what this is a several volume collection of Lee County, Iowa, which has Keokuk and other towns like that in there. But it isn't because this is such a valuable collection, because it's really not. I mean, our total estimate on is $1,200 to $1,700. But the fellow who formed this did most of his collecting during the 1930s to the 1950s. And every single page is loaded with wonderful write-ups of the county's history, not the covers themselves. He from the 1800s in there, and multiple hand-drawn illustrations throughout. I mean, this is a case where really the art of the collection transcends the material itself. It's just a work of art.
Somebody built it with love.
Absolutely. And you know, there are good covers in there, but that wasn't what really was catching my eye.
Yeah. Wow. I've seen things like that before, and they're really mind-blowing when you look at them, and especially if it's from your hometown or something like that. It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
So sounds like you're going to have...
find a good home.
Sounds like you're going to have a really great auction there, Wayne.
I think so. This is shaping up to be a very exciting one. Bids are coming in very strong already. We look for it to be a good sale.
Well, why don't you tell everybody when it is? I mean, let's make a little commercial for you since you came on to talk with us.
All righty. The sale itself is going to take place on April 2nd and 3rd here in St. Louis at the Renaissance St. Louis Airport Hotel. And again, this is part of our St. Louis Stamp Expo annual show, which is, again, one of the World Series shows. But it takes place over 2 days at 11 o'clock a.m., both Saturday and Sunday. And the first session will feature everything from U.S. coins through U.S. singles and on through possessions. And then the second day is usually where a lot of the excitement is, and that starts with British singles and goes through all the covers and accumulations and box lots, which is where... we don't have fist fights break up. We get some good action.
Okay, let me ask you a question. I want to go back because you just sparked a little question inside of me that I didn't know the answer to. There is so much bidding now going online. First of all, you allow people to bid online, right? Or do you have an online setup?
Well, we allow people to bid online up to 1 hour before the session starts.
Yeah.
At this, if we tried to go live with the auction at this point, you know, it would take 4 or 5 times as long as it does.
Oh, believe me, I've seen those.
So bidders can bid live up to an hour before the session starts, and then beyond that, of course, we have auction agents, we have telephone bidders, and of course, good old-fashioned bid sheets too.
Did you set up your own site for taking these bids or something? What I'm sort of like asking is this a high-tech thing, or is this just the equivalent of an email service? You know, they send you it and you can bid, or is it like something more sophisticated? Because I've seen them everywhere from send us your sheet, we don't want to deal with the computer at all, to these big, huge things that, you know, right before the auction starts, it crashes and delays the auction 2 hours and everybody gets pissed off. So I was wondering just, you know, what your thinking was for it and what you implemented.
Well, the system that we have is one that essentially we had custom written for us. Now we do interface with some of the other, you know, live auction sites and such, and they get feeds from us. But yeah, ours is actually was custom written for us.
Cool. And I basically that's sort of like 20th century versus 18th century auctions, right?
Yeah, basically. Now, one of the things that we're going to do, we tried very experimentally and kind of quietly in February, but in June we will feature an online-only auction. And this is going to be a blast style where we'll have everything available to bid online, but all lots are going to close simultaneously. So what happens is if a lot, let's say it's programmed to close at 7:07 p.m. or whatever. If a lot does not have a bid, it immediately gets knocked out and closed out. But if it has bid, for the next 15 minutes, people can bid as much as they want on any number of lots that are still in the running, and then the whole thing shuts down.
Mm.
And seemed to be very well received in February, and so we're rolling it out with a little bit more fanfare in June.
Well, obviously, us being a podcast on YouTube and everything, we're into new technology. So I'm very curious as to how the business is changing. So that's why I wanted to ask the question. Thank you very much for talking.
Oh, absolutely.
Anything you want to say before we go?
Well, thank you very much for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
We'll see you in St. Louis.
All righty.
Thanks for joining us, Wayne.
Thank you very much, Don.
You can email us at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com, Twitter stampshowht, Facebook stampshowheretoday, and our website, www.stampshowheretoday.com, with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on our Google Voice answering machine anytime, 1-949-873-4298. There is also a link to Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hi, I'm Mark Reisner, president of the American Stamp Dealers Association, and you are listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
This episode of Stamp Show Today is brought to you not only by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, but also by the Philatelic Book of Secrets Volume 2. Volume 2 covers even more secrets. It can be bought alone for $10 or together with Part 1 for $15 at gradingmatters.com. Get yours today!
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, based in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey. And I just want to say that the stamp hobby is alive and well here, and we love buying and selling stamps. We pay very, very, very good prices, so we'd rather buy 9 out of 10 collections than just a very small percentage of what we see. Also, check us out on our website at GaryPosnerInc.com. You'll see a lot of great stamps at great prices. And any questions, just feel free to call Bob at 1-800-323-4279. That's Bob Prager at 1-800-323-4279. And my cell number is 917-538-8133. Happy hunting out there. To send up, address unknown, no such number.